Culture of Kits, the definitive guide to classic football shirt collecting. It's a fascinating exploration of the booming business behind the growing culture and community surrounding vintage football shirts. Delighted to say that joining me live on the line is the author of A Culture of Kits. It's John Blair. John, good afternoon from us. Good morning to you.
Afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, thank you. Whereabouts are you on the planet today?
I'm in the snowy mountains of Utah, towards the west coast of America.
And my first question is, what is a football shirt collector doing there? Because last time I looked, I'm not sure of the Utah United away kit, but I'm sure you'll tell me about it.
Yeah, well, we do have an MLS team here. That's a Real Salt Lake. They played against Messi in Miami on kind of Wednesday night there. Yeah, it's starting to grow. It's certainly not to the same extent as you see in Europe there, but there is certainly more interest and more intrigue. And with the World Cup coming here in 2026, I'm sure it's going to continue to boom.
So for those who are sort of scratching their heads and going, I never knew there was such a thing as classic football shirt collecting. So where did it all sort of start and kick off?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I wrote the book really to kind of satisfy my own curiosity around that exact question, because I've always loved football shirts. I've always collected football shirts from the age of kind of 9 or 10. But really, in recent years, it's become much more prominent within broader society. And the lines between kind of fashion and football are really starting to blur. So if you look at kind of football fashion at music festivals, or you start seeing all these celebrities out on their morning coffee run in LA wearing kind of Juventus shirts from the mid-90s, that's really kind of what got me interested in taking a look at this story and trying to figure out who's buying, who's selling, what motivates them, and really kind of where this culture and community has come from.
Because I was around in the loaded era, you know, the mid 90s in London, and as a young man, there was a huge sort of explosion of retro t-shirts, retro football shirts. So people were wearing original Man Cities or copies of them, or you know, the Soviet Union goalkeeper, the CCCP, those iconic things. Was that sort of a open the door and let people get in at an entry level?
Yeah, I mean, football more broadly during that era was interesting. Obviously, you had the kind of terrorist battlegrounds of the 80s, and we were emerging from that with the launch of the Premier League, the Champions League, Euro 96, obviously a kind of pivotal moment in the UK as well. And so football started to become cool again, kind of more broadly, and then also you started to see much more expressive design. So whilst, you know, the 70s and 80s and some of those kits are great, they are fairly simplistic. And so with an expansion of kind of design and the technology around shirts, the designs got a little wackier. People started to wear them in kind of more social settings. And so that was definitely the origins. But if you think of the last kind of 5 or 6 years when social media has really kicked in, and particularly during COVID, when people maybe had a bit more time on their hands and potentially more cash, and not everyone, but with the furlough payments, we started to see a lot more kind of acceleration in terms of kind of the buying of kits and sourcing the original vintage shirts from the 90s and 80s.
Because, I mean, the other thing is the fact that, you know, people always go on about branding and sponsorship and image, but football kits are, even those who aren't literate or know much about the game, if you show somebody an Arsenal kit, they will know it's Arsenal. West Ham, it's West Ham. Juventus, you know, the black and white stripes, they will know that because it's been, if you like, embedded in the collective psyche for generations.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point. I mean, people talk about music and how if you hear a bit of music, it transports you back to that period in time and who you're with and happy and sad and all the rest of it. And for millions of football fans, the emotional attachment to a football shirt kind of plays the same role. You see that kit from, you know, whatever it might be, World Cup in 86 or 1994, and it immediately transports you back to watching that game or who you're with and all the emotions that come with it. And the design features have definitely changed. I mean, you look at that 90s period, there's a lot of nostalgia around some of those sponsors that are no longer with us. So, you know, an example might be the Sony Minidisc, which had a very short lifespan. But still, those are kind of collectible items that people really kind of enjoy delving into.
And also, there's the national teams that you talk about early 90s, but I'm thinking that West Germany. Was it West Germany in 1990? Was it Germany? I think it was Germany, wasn't it, in 1990?
Yeah, 88.
Yeah.
Yeah, 88, 90.
I mean that kit is iconic, and as is perhaps the Dutch kit of 88 because of Van Basten and Gullit and all those players.
Yeah, exactly. I mean that 1988 kit in particular for Holland, I mean that's one that people hold up as the kind of greatest football shirt design of all time. And even that shirt, I mean it probably sold in your local sports shop for kind of £20-30 at the time. you're really lucky to get hold of one, just that version of it, for kind of under maybe £800 based on the current pricing. And it is due to that design. It's also due to association with those players, the fact they won Euro 88. There's a lot of factors there. But that is generally, when you kind of run these industry and community polls, that's the one that comes out on top.
And also, the thing is, it's a bit like people send me records because I work, you know, allegedly I work on the radio and I know what I'm doing, allegedly. And they say, oh, I've got a couple of records here from the 60s and can you have a look at them? Because I saw that one sold at auction for, you know, £500. But it's got to be basically still in its wrapping. It's a bit like the dinky toys we had when we were kids, you know, crashing the Thunderbirds toys around. If we'd looked after the boxes, they'd probably be worth about 800 now. Is it the same with football kits? If it's not been basically used?
It does depend. I mean, there's a premium definitely for kind of new with tags and obviously match worn. I mean, that's the holy grail in terms of pricing. And obviously we saw the Maradona shirt for £7 million recently at auction. That's the top of the pyramid. But even the shirts that were worn, they can be slightly used and faded and what have you. Those are still in the hundreds. So again, I've seen kind of Holland 88 shirts where the Adidas trefoil is nearly worn off and it's still in the kind of £400 or £500 in that condition. So there's definitely value there. It's kind of worth looking through it. And, you know, that's the other exciting part of it. I mean, everyone's got their story. They've got their kits. They're raking through their attics and they're kind of finding hidden gems there. And so it's definitely worth kind of going through that exercise.
And also there are perhaps the teams that burned really brightly for a season and then sort of faded away. I couldn't help but mention the Venice kit. And also, was it the Sampdoria or the Fiorentina? Because that is also a highly priced kit, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Venezia, they're doing some really interesting stuff now with Kappa. They're really kind of pushing the envelope in terms of design and kind of bringing back some of those kind of 90s features. I think we all had that iconic Kappa tracksuit during the 90s with the badge down the sleeves, and so those are starting to make a return. But yeah, there's a lot of nostalgia around Serie A in the 90s, and I mean, that's something I'm kind of really passionate about. Driven by Channel 4, I mean, if you were a kid growing up then, it was really accessible to see those games every weekend. The players were iconic with your Batistugas and Vialis and others. But yeah, Sampdoria, Fiorentina with the Nintendo sponsor, the big 7-Up sponsor as well. And then, you know, Parma, obviously a highly successful team towards the end of the 90s with Asprilla and Cannavaro and Buffon and all these legends. So there's definitely a lot of appetite around those shirts.
Because it bought into, because in a world now where we can watch, I don't know, Ecuadorian football on any channel sort of thing, but yeah, football, I guess it was football Italian, wasn't it? Channel 4 with the commentator or the host having a small espresso.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, legendary kind of TV production. And I think more broadly around that time, so you think of 1992, Games Master on Channel 4, the big breakfast launch. They were really kind of exploring how to kind of change formats around television. And Football Italia was no different. So they kind of lose the stuffy ties and the kind of four guys sat around the table. And suddenly it's James Richardson out doing kind of skits with David Platt and Lombardo and making it a little bit more kind of entertaining. And again, it was accessible. Not everyone was kind of paying for Sky and all the various other platforms that were around at the time. So there's a whole generation where it really kind of started. And there was also kind of seismic changes around that time as well. So one that's kind of a little bit more niche in the football shirt collecting world is the player name sets on the back. So it wasn't until the mid-90s that players got their own individual squad numbers. There was 1 to 11 before that. And so if you think now you can buy any player shirt with the name above it, back then that wasn't the case. And so there was limited supply, which again kind of increases the demand for trying to get hold of those shirts.
And going back to national teams, we talked about West Germany being great. I mean, I always had a thing for the East German kit as well because it was so, because it hasn't been there for a long time. Oh, it wasn't there for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, not to get too heavy on political landscape, but there's certainly countries, obviously, where the borders have kind of blurred over time and there's kits and countries that are around for certain periods that are no longer there. And so there's a rarity around that side of things as well. So, yeah, absolutely.
Can we just talk about one of the greatest, though, in my humble opinion, greatest nations ever to grace the international stage in terms of kit wear, and that is Mexico. Because, my goodness, they go. I don't know what their designers take, but I remember the goalkeeper, was it Santos in 94 in the States? And he wore an outfit that could be seen basically from the International Space Station.
Yeah, and apparently he designed it himself, which is even more incredible that, you know, a player can be that involved in the design process. But yeah, he was iconic. And I mean, I love, it's in the book, but I love the 1998 shirt. It's got a large Aztec face. in the middle of the shirt. Again, like really expressive design. That's another one that's kind of super expensive, regardless of what condition it's in. Mexico kits are incredible. And there's one, maybe one closer to home for you guys there in Marbella, but the 97 to 2000 kits for Atletico Madrid with the Marbella sponsor.
Oh, yes.
They're pretty in demand, obviously. I assume at the time they were promoting tourism, but, shorts like that have an affiliation with a location or country or also.
Well, you've done your research, but the only problem with that was there has been a little bit of, shall we say, interesting money going through that one. So it wasn't perhaps,
really?
Yeah, but through the cold light of day, it's not perhaps the best representation of Marbella, put it that way. You're talking about being in the States and being in the States and the leagues, and obviously I'm just thinking about that first time round in the States when you had Tampa Bay Rowdies and New York Cosmos. I mean, with Pelly and Beckerbauer. I mean, that must be a kit. If you can get hold of one of the original New York Cosmos kits, must be great.
Those are gold dust, definitely in the thousands in terms of getting hold of some of them. I do have a Houston Dynamo kit from Admiral on the dock from about, I think it's 76 maybe. So you can get hold of them, but yeah, it is. America's had a bit of a love-hate relationship with soccer for a long time now in terms of the original National Soccer League. It kind of died out with some of those players you mentioned. They just didn't have the caliber of players surrounding those big signings to make it sustainable. And then it obviously came back, I think it was about 29 years ago now with the MLS. And it's hitting its stride. It's definitely different to European soccer. Going to the games, much more family focused. The halftime entertainment, sometimes it's hard to tell if it's a team coming out or if it's going to be Justin Bieber. the music's blasting, the lights are going. It's different, but my kids love it, and certainly the attendances are growing. Messi being over here as a Ballon d'Or winner and the World Cup coming here. I'm sure it will continue to expand and kind of improve in the years to come.
You see, this is going to be my next question because, Beckham's involved with Miami, Messi's over there, a huge Hispanic population, and it's a franchise. I mean, what's not to love? And presumably those Messi t-shirts, if you can get the Messi shirts, if you can get that Miami kit, because I imagine a load of people on the PlayStations and the games are playing these MLS teams because they look different, and that's the way they, almost the way that the franchises go these days to market.
Yeah. Yeah, the Messi kits are just, again, they kind of sell out really quickly. The MLS is different to other leagues. So Adidas, for example, holds the entire franchise. So every team is made by Adidas from a design perspective. They make the kits every 2 years, which is more sustainable and more economical. So you'll have the same kit for a couple of seasons, which is great. But they are pricey. If you try and get an American football kit, an authentic one, or the NBA, the basketball kits, it's kind of $300 or $400. And so the pricing is expensive, even for the kind of replicas and the authentic versions. The Messi ones, and even tickets for the game. They're selling. That stadium is pretty limited. It might be 15,000 or 20,000, but the tickets, it's hard to get in there for less than £500-600 just to watch him play. So there is huge appetite to kind of see him in person, see him live, given, who knows, this might be his last season in the MLS.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because that just, you have to balance the corporate against the marketing, against the true fan, I suppose, in the States, with the greatest respect to those who've been following their teams in the States for a long time. Not that many followers on a grassroots level, so therefore it's easier and more profitable for the clubs to sell it out as Lionel Messi and have the corporate boxes full and making it that as the Americans do, an event, a whole day.
Oh yeah, that's part of the culture, right? These American football games go on for hours, and there's barbecues and eggs and kegs, as they call it over here, in terms of the kind of pre-match activities. So yeah, there's definitely that. There's a lot of fanfare around it, and I'm sure that will kind of continue to grow as well. How sustainable it is, they're obviously going to try and grow the sport. There's competition with American football and baseball and basketball, and so we'll see how successful they are there. But people like Beckham coming in definitely has a huge pull. And I'm sure they'll continue to add franchises as well.
What's the sort of kit that everybody wants to avoid, or in your opinion, is the one that makes you go, "Blimey, O'Reilly, what were they thinking?" There've been some sort of pink monstrosities. There was a Liverpool sort of grey kit, wasn't there, a while back, the away kit?
Yeah, there's a lot. It's challenging for the designers, I guess. They've got to get creative every season, and they're knocking out three, four. Napoli had 13 shirts one season, so it's pretty hard to make them new. There's definitely some horror shows, I think. Legere in Spain, I believe, with the large prawn kit that they had on the front and the back of the shirt. It was a tuxedo one. So there's definitely smaller clubs trying to become more prominent and using design to kind of elevate awareness around their shirts, which, you know, I guess it does work in some regards. But yeah, there's definitely a few out there in terms of kits to avoid.
So what was the idea then with the book itself? Was it to just, A, it's great to flick through, it's very colourful, it's beautifully presented, and it will start some memories. I mean, you know, because again, the shape of kits have changed. I mean, if you look at Euro 96, those matches, everybody seems to be wearing very baggy stuff indeed, whilst obviously now it's all composite materials and, you know, breathable, etc.
Yeah, so the kits themselves, I mean, yeah, you're right. Like back in the 90s, it was almost like these players were running in a windsock, where like, the kits were massive, built into wear extra large, regardless of what size they were. And then the other interesting thing is that the kits the player wore, those are the ones you could buy in the shops as a fan. I think we'd all recognize that the modern athlete probably needs something a little bit more designed for their performance rather than the guy in the pub. And so the shirts have got tighter, they've got thinner, the offensive versions, the material is super light. And so, you know, that comes at a premium. If you want to buy the same price same kit as the players, you have to pay more for it. I think the other thing that's changing, again, closer to home for you guys in Spain, but if you look at the sponsorship, the Spotify deal with Barcelona, where they can put the Rolling Stones on the kit, you know, 1 week, and then the Drake logo on the other. I mean, I think we'll see more of that with more kind of sponsorship changes as the teams try and drive more revenue. So that's one change that'll come as well.
There was an awful lot of debate about that. If Pique was still at Barcelona, would they be featuring Shakira over here in Spain?
Yeah, I'm sure that would cause some concern.
So what do you hope that people will learn, if you like, from your book?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, I took a kind of two-pronged attack on it. So the book itself, as you say, I think it looks incredible. The designers have really done an amazing job with it in terms of the shirts and the photography, and you can flick through it and have a look and generate those memories and see those kids from going back 40, 50 years, which is awesome. The part of the story I felt like hadn't really been told is what makes a shirt a classic out of all the thousands that are produced every year. Why do some become worthless and some go on to become worth thousands? And really the story of the people involved. So where does this come from? Where will these large sellers come from? The collectors, the community. And then where do we go from here in terms of both being able to predict future classics as well as being able to kind of how the industry evolves and what we'll see in that space. So it's really a combination of all those different things. There's other books out there certainly that kind of celebrate kits, but as I say, I thought this one's a little bit different in terms of going deep on some of the mechanics and some of the elements that haven't been explored previously.
And for yourself, if you had to pick three top kits, here we go. You knew you were going to get this question. What are the ones that, they don't have to be your favorite kits, but the ones that are the stand out the most. I mean, for me, that Mexico kit with the Aztec on the front is absolutely brilliant. But what are your sort of three favorites? I won't pin you down to one.
I'll pick a few. I mean, definitely the Aztec one. I love the USA 94 one, which got the flag through the material, yes. Like a denim with the stars, which is awesome. Really like that one. Fiorentina, I'm a big collector of, which you can probably tell from the book, but the Fiorentina Nintendo and 7-Up ones from the 90s with the Serie A era is definitely one. And then, you know, I love the Juventus shirts with the Sony and the mini disc from the mid-90s as well, just as that kind of period is really blossoming in the UK as well. So I'd probably say those, if I was an English one, you know, the Man United 95, the black one where the Eric Cantona kung fu kick, and that's iconic as well, so I'd go for that one.
Yeah, one that embedded itself literally into the cultural memory. The book is called A Culture of Kits. It's by John Blair. John, if people want to find you online, I know you're out there because I'm looking at the social medias now.
Yeah, Collar Up Kits on Instagram is my main page. So I post, my pictures of my shirts there. A little bit on X and Twitter as well under the same handle. People can reach and follow me there. And book number two is in the works. And so hopefully people enjoy this one and looking forward to bringing some more shirt content in the future.
So it's Collar Up Kits on Instagram. There's a section there marked the Holy Grail, so you can go off and explore that one. The book is called A Culture of Kits. It's by John Blair. John, thank you so much for your time today.
No problem. Delighted to join you. Thank you so much.